So let's just do a quick look at this picture again, and I'll read the verse. I'm going to stop my video so you can see the image. It's taking in that image of the ox being led kind of in a quiet way next to the big, by being led by the young man with a little slack in the rope. So the whip and rope are necessary. They'll send me straight down some dusty road. Being well trained, it becomes naturally gentle. Then, unfettered, it obeys its master. The whip and rope are necessary, else it might stray down some dusty road. Being well trained becomes naturally gentle. Then, unfettered, it obeys its master. All right, we can switch back to the gallery view so I don't look like Oz from the Wizard of Oz. I am the great and powerful. My face is portrayed on the big screen, so it's a little, there we are, back to the room view. So when I read this, when I look at this image here, this picture of the ox and kind of this stage of where we are halfway through these series, it really, for me, speaks to wise effort. The understanding of how do we use our effort in a way that's wise, that leads to lessening our suffering, and also leads to moving toward freedom. You know, where is that edge? That poem I read by Kabir, you know, that sense of seeing something about ourselves we want to get rid of, and we repress it, and then something else pops up instead. And so we could say that's speaking toward when our effort is, we're trying to go in a fruitful way, but we're actually just keep shifting the block, shifting we're missing the core thing. So last week I spoke of kind of three areas that we can look at to help our effort be wise. The first one is our intention and our view behind that effort. This is in some ways the most fundamental, but also the most subtle. Because our deep intention behind our efforts, our actions, if you will, sometimes it's not so clear. But sometimes we can reflect back on our actions, especially actions that kind of cause a lot of turbulence in our lives, cause a lot of, you know, reactivity coming back at us, something that's unskillful. Just stepping back and saying, really, what was the intention, the deeper intention behind that? And particularly, we're talking not so much about the intention of like, okay, I didn't mean to speak in a way that caused harm. That's a superficial intention, which is important to notice. But there's a deeper intention underneath that, or a deeper view of separation, of isolation, of self and other. That shapes the very way that we speak, the very way we see, hear, interpret life. So this is, speaking of view, is really this deeper perspective that really runs the show, runs how we act. It actually shapes the very way we perceive things, the very way we create the world through this mind and body, through our sense gates. And so learning to see that in a deeper and deeper way. So if that intention, if that view isn't seen and that intention isn't seen, our actions will be a little bit distorted, for the lack of a better word. They may not be quite so perfectly wise. And this is where this is so interesting, and this is kind of a nuance of our training as meditators, is that we start to learn how do we focus our attention? How do we let go of our mind's chatter? How do we come back again and again? How do we do that with a sense of calmness, a sense of gentleness, a sense of self-compassion? And how do we, we start to see that steadiness start to grow. And even with that training, if we don't step back and notice the deeper attitude behind it, there's still that quality of perhaps not being quite as wise as it could be. So I'm kind of going back and forth between being too subtle and too much in the middle of things. Let's go back in a more obvious way. So we talked about this last week. When we're practicing and we find ourselves lost in thought, and how do we come back to our breath or our object of attention is really critical. To notice that it coming back with a sense of harshness, a sense of struggle, a sense of self-judgment, a sense of somehow I failed, right? So that's all speaking from a particular voice, a particular viewpoint, and the intention that naturally flows from that viewpoint. Versus, you know, as I instructed in the instructions, just the suchness of this moment, the way the moment is, can I just relax into how it actually is in this moment? Can I relax even though my mind may be preferring something else? Even my mind may be struggling, wanting something different. Can I relax with that in itself? Just asking us to step back more into the attitude that we have behind our meditation, the very assumptions we pick up. So looking at these, interpreting from these pictures here, these eight ox herding pictures, there's this point where there's a clarity of intention and clarity of view, which is aligned, and the ox is responding to that. Well, last month, remember, there's this whole struggle of trying to catch the ox. That little rope between the ox and the boy is just taunt. It's like pulling with all its might, trying to keep that ox caught while the ox would run away and disappear at times. Or versus trying to find the ox, trying to see the ox. So when we start to have that clarity, we start to be able to have much more finesse with our practice, much more ease with our practice. And also, we start to see, okay, what is that intention or that view behind it, the attitude? And a modern teacher, Ute Janiya, speaks quite a bit about around this with his 10 or 12 pieces of wise attitude. What's the wise attitude behind meditation? And that's a helpful thing to look at. We have it on our website under resources. And you can also just look at Ute Janiya's version of it. And so it points to that, what's our assumptions behind why we meditate? And so often our struggle we have in meditation is one of attitude, one of view, and one of intention. And so often just realizing that, oh, I'm just struggling with this moment. I'm not allowing the moment to be how it is. I'm not allowing my mind to be how it is. My grief, my anger, my sadness, my joy, my lust, that relationship to the moment, that creates that level of struggle. And so in this way, this rope and whip and rope are necessary. Else, you know, our attention may wander down some dusty road. It may go into reactivity. It may go into fantasy. So learning to find that edge of how do we really use effort in a skillful way. And then what I was also kind of pointing toward before I clarified my thinking in this little talk is the deeper attitude of self, of assumption of self, assumption of I. And this is a very subtle quality, a very deep quality that we just take for granted. I'm sitting down, I'm meditating. I'm the one who's sitting, I'm the one who's trying to focus on my breath, I'm the one who's trying to let go of that thought. So part of that, that's how we have to start. But we can easily keep that kind of ongoing as a backdrop. And from the deepest perspective of wise view or wise effort, I should say, it's not quite so wise because it reinforcing that sense of self. So again, we start there. We need to use ourselves to work on our meditation, to cultivate the training. But eventually we have to see that also as part of the meditation. To see, does it reinforce the sense of self? I think it's important to point this out because these pictures, I think for many of us, we can think, okay, this should be the last picture, right? We found the ox, we caught it, we tamed it. There's nothing else that needs to be done, right? Maybe next picture I can really coast on that taming, that unity, right? But that's only picture 5 right now. So the ox goes into this mysterious vanishing. The ox is forgotten. You know, so what's that relationship? The self remains. And then this is not next month, but a month after. then the self is forgotten. So this, these teachings really point to this really deep understanding of what is wise effort. What is that understanding of what really truly causes the suffering that the Buddha figured out the solution to. So this is all just this first part of noticing our intention, our view behind how we're acting, how we're meditating, how we're meeting life. The next part is related, and that's understanding the ox's behavior, understanding how does the ox act the way it does. You know, how can we train our minds? How do we start to understand our patterns? This is really embedded in our practice from day one, is just the clarity of seeing, learning to see more and more clearly how is our mind, how is our body in this moment, in this very moment. How is it showing up? What's the experience right here? So often we confuse the moment's experience with our reaction to it, our interpretation of it, our preference around it. And we're looking at not at the actual moment, but how we wish it was. Not the actual moment, but how we wish it would never end. We're meeting not the moment, but our memory of it, our interpretation of the moment. Or maybe our reaction to them. That's what we key in on. As meditators, we're learning this profound gift to ourselves is to start to sift through that, to actually connect deeply with how things actually are. We start in a very simple, benign way, like sound, breath, body sensation. That's meant to go much deeper into the very perspective of who we take ourselves to be. So learning, the sense of learning the behavior, really seeing clearly, understanding our conditioning is really cultivated by our capacity to see clearly, to see without distortion. There's a phrase from the suttas, taking the dust away from our eyes. Learning to see without our normal level of opinionation, of bias, conscious and unconscious. So that way we can actually turn to right in the middle of this moment, wanting the moment to be warmer, cooler, wanting our minds to be this way or that way, wanting something different in the world. And it's meeting that moment. And this is, you know, this last week has been very difficult for many of us with the Supreme Court's decisions, with just the level of I don't know how to say it, just the level of that discounting of people's rights. You know, so this is a huge thing that we're all living through in this country. And some of us perhaps are celebrating it. Some of us are really outraged. Some of us are very sad, or all of the above. And so how do we meet that moment? And how do we actually meet our own reaction to it? And this is where it's important, remembering that we're not just a passive practice. It's really meant to come into the world. It's really meant to show up of how we be in the world. So learning to meet the moment, how our reaction is really clearly, provides this bedrock for how do we actually act in the world. Learning to meet someone else's experience allows us to connect. And then from there, wise action starts to flow. The pathways start to open up in ways that they can if we stay within our reaction. So we can take it from these really big society issues down to the very personalness of our own lives, our own families, our own friendships. So learning to see clearly allows us to train that ox, learning to train our minds, learning to navigate our lives. And the final section, or final suggestion I had around this picture around wise effort, is learning when structure is needed, when we need to put more force, if you will, or more effort forward? And when do we know, when to surrender, to let go? So this picture is this shift in these whole series so far, that the ox is first unseen, then there's traces of the ox, then there's actually seeing the ox, then there's actually trying to catch the ox, and then tremendous struggle with that. Then there's the taming of the ox. There's the struggle, and then things start to become more harmonious. Being well trained, it becomes naturally gentle. Then unfettered, it obeys its master. And so that's, in some ways, difficult part for many of us in our practice, is learning when to just kind of get out of the way, to let the meditation run itself. When the ox is following us, there's no tension. The ox is just there. There's no need to have any heavy-handedness. There's no need to exert our will. A technical example of this is if you do a noting practice, noting breathing in and breathing out. It can be very skillful when the mind is really distracted. You're trying to train that cultivation of steadiness. Very helpful. At some point, that noting becomes a little loud, becomes a little too much, because I'm having to always interpret, okay, I'm breathing in versus breathing out. And there's a part of us, our heart really wants to just simply be with it, be in that sense of stillness, simply noticing, observing. There's less of a sense of separation between us and our breath at that point, between us and the ox. And it starts to lead into next picture, when the ox and the boy no longer have this rope, but they're simply connected to each other. They're simply moving through the path back home. So these three elements, and hopefully they have some helpfulness around, how do we bring our effort? How do we bring wise effort? Understanding our deeper intentionality, our deeper view behind that intention, because that's going to profoundly shape how our actions show up. Learning to see and understand the nature of our minds, to understand the nature of things like the hindrances, natures of our patterns of reactivity, of control, of judgment. These are all things we can understand. Understanding when the ox, how do we train the ox in a gentle way, in a way that allows it to settle. And then finally, knowing when to structure, when to add input, and when to get out of the way and just let things flow. All right, so we'll just sit quietly for a few moments, letting those words settle, and then I'll introduce the questions for some small group exploration. Right, so these discussion groups are a chance for us to share our understanding, to share our confusion, to share our struggle, to share how we're really tackling the teachings. It's really a helpful way to engage in your practice and engage in community. As the Buddha said, that so much of our practice really is around Sangha, around the spiritual friendship. It's really a rare chance to be able to explore these topics with other people. So I'd like to, we'll have both groups here in person and also online. All right, so the question is around the homework from last week. So looking at your meditation practice is a training of the mind and attention. Right? So consistency, patience, gentleness, firmness are all needed. But reflect on your intention behind the training. Okay, so that's the first part, is start to notice what's your background intention that you can bring behind your training, and also the view of it. Is it based in love or on hatred, for example? Is it based in compassion or wisdom? Also reflect on how understanding your mind helps you understand how to train your mind. And how do you know when to guide, when to add direction, and when do you know when to step out? to let the meditation just kind of go by itself, right? So those three elements of when you, what's your intention behind your training of your mind? What is your, is it based in love or hatred? How does understanding your mind help? And also, when do you know when to get out? All right, so those in the room, you can go ahead and join in groups about 3 to 4. We'll do this for about 20 minutes. And those online, hang on a second, I'll get you set up in some breakout rooms. So just my preamble to try to encourage people to ask questions. How are you engaging around practice? Anything around this topic, anything around, life that you like to explore from a dharmic standpoint. So those online, you can just go ahead and raise your virtual hand and I see it, I'll call on you. And those in, here in person can also raise their real hand. Okay, so I think Almond, would you like to go first?
Yeah, sure. My name is pronounced Iman, but totally fine. But I, sorry, I'm just going to lower my hand. I have sort of a question, and it's not, maybe it is in relation to the question, the homework, but what, maybe it's in relation to like being firm or in surrendering, because I recently got knee surgery and it's very painful. And during this practice, I was in a machine that's kind of moving my leg and the physical pain is pretty great. And so it's very hard for me to, I said, okay, I'm going to focus on the pain, but my mind wanted to wander a lot. Like it just did not want to stay with it. And just wondering, you know, of course I have to be gentle with myself in these days, but like at the same point, how do I practice in this different way that I'm not used to?
Yeah, thank you. That's a great question. Because often what we're trying to focus on, well, not often, but sometimes it becomes more than our minds can steady on. Sometimes it's because of the intensity of the physical pain, like from the knee surgery. Sometimes it's emotional. I remember years ago, my wife was in the hospital and I was trying to meditate like you're describing, but the intensity of it was just like, if it literally felt like my attention was like water falling on a Skittle, it just would just jump right off. It had no sense of landing, no sense of penetration, no sense of connection because it was so intense. And so part of it is just noticing, okay, what I'm doing isn't working. What else can I try? What else can I focus on? So for me in that time, I focused on metta because metta gave me something. Okay, may I be safe. May I be happy. May I be peaceful. May my wife be safe, happy, and peaceful. May all the caregivers be safe and happy and peaceful. And I had trouble connecting with metta until that point because I realized, oh, this really has a powerful way of intentionality, of really connecting in that way. So you might play with that. You might also play with the technique of titration or balancing our attention. So if the pain is too much, whether it's physical as you're describing, and it's probably not just physical, there's probably also emotional, mental stuff kind of swirling around with them. How long is this going to last? Am I going to recover to where I was before? You know, all these kind of things going on. The loss of being of freedom to be able to move around the way you want. I mean, it's a big package, right? It's not just pain. It's a package of stuff. There's the future. What's the future going to be like? What's the past? Oh, I wish the past was better. I wish I hadn't hurt myself or whatever it might be. There's all that stuff is kind of right there, right? So often that's too much of a charge to open to. And that's just knowing that itself is really helpful. That's half the battle, if you will. So titration is a technique that sometimes we can use with, I learned it from a trauma technique, actually. So instead of going into something just full bore, if you find yourself kind of bouncing out like you're describing, it's too much, choose something else in the moment that is actually more neutral or even pleasant. and hang out there for a little while. And then go touch on the pain for a little bit and then go back to what's neutral, pleasant. Could be another part of your body. Could be something like sound. Could be something visual, like just looking at like I can see the play of the light on the evening sky, evening light on the trees. And it has a really lovely quality to it. Gentle whispering of the leaves, you know, as they flutter in the breeze. So really letting your attention really land there, really soak into that. And then going back a little bit, just maybe one part into the pain and five parts into what's neutral or even pleasant in the moment. And what this does, it allows you to kind of reclaim that balance of mindfulness, that sense of a steady attention, a gentle attention, an attention that's able to kind of conform to things instead of becoming rigid with our reaction. Because what you're describing, again, is very common. And as sincere meditators, we try to go right into the pain. And sometimes the pain makes our mindfulness itself become reaction. It kind of becomes co-opted by the intensity of it. So recognizing that, then we can learn to work with that. Does that kind of that make sense?
That was very, very helpful. Thank you so much.
And could you help me with your name one more time?
Sure. It's Ayman.
Ayman. Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, my eyes aren't so good, so I missed the I completely there.
Oh, that's okay. It's hard to pronounce. So yeah, just ask me again if you need to. No worries.
Yes. Yeah, and please correct me anytime I say it wrong.
Sure.
Thank you, Ayman. Nice to talk to you. I hope you recover quickly.
Thank you.
All right, so let's see if there's anyone here in the room who'd like to share anything. You're all asleep from the heat. Okay, go ahead, Cheryl.
Well, we had a really nice discussion in our group. And I think that what I had an experience during the retreat where I ended up believing something that, you know, wasn't true. And that's kind of my thing, you know, something will happen and I'll believe that, you know, that something else is going on, and maybe in this time shame came up, and instead of being in the moment, and I can't beat myself up about this either, but instead of being in the moment there, I was and I wanted to make it go away. And so in retrospect, you know, I had an opportunity to totally be in the moment there, you know, and be with that feeling of it just doesn't feel right now, and I'm not mindful. I mean, that's what it was. I was feeling, I am not mindful in speech, and that's I'm screwing this up. So, and then somebody else mentioned, you know, the vulnerability in our practice, the vulnerability of having a feeling come up and really being with it and not pushing it away and allowing that vulnerability to, you know, to inform our practice, and then aligning with kindness. And that's my everyday, like in my relationship, you know, struggles right now. And they're actually getting easier, you know, because, yeah, but it's never going to be the way I expect it's going to be. It's not going to be that way. So I guess that's all I wanted to say about that.
All right. Thank you, Cheryl. Could you hear her online okay?
Yeah.
Oh, good. Yeah, so just the sharing around the retreat that she was recently on and noticing, sometimes we call that the yogi mind, that we see something. And it's like we don't really have a lot going on in the retreat, so some things become like amplified. We take all that energy we usually use in our life to orchestrate, and we're like get obsessed about, you know, the window being open or closed. It could be something like that. And it becomes such a huge thing. It gets amplified by the stillness of the retreat. And yeah, it's, I mean, ideally you could be mindful of that, but there's also just a learning in how powerful that is and how much that takes control of you. You know, as we all know that, and we start to learn that. And this is actually a gift if you can kind of set aside the judgment of, you know, I should have been different. Okay, what did I learn from that? And it's like, wow, this mind has some energy behind it when it gets, you know, reactive. It's like, wow, that's it's interesting just to notice that. So then suddenly you're relating to it not from a place of something to get over, but something to actually understand, to actually relate to. And then you can have a chance of reconnecting with that intention of kindness, or realigning with that. And often we find our way through that, you know, through trial and error. You know, these pictures didn't start with this image of just leading the ox. There was a lot of time trying to find where that ox is. That's like being in the middle of that mind state. Okay, I don't know where the ox is. I just know I want things to be different. And then you start to get a glimpse. So maybe I could like soften this way or that way. You actually, you know, see the ox. Then you actually start to, catch the ox. And so you went through that same process. And then sitting there right now, there's more of that. Okay, you're kind of leading the ox home, and you know, it's mostly following you. You keep checking to make sure it's there. And so you can see how it's really a nice teaching way of articulating things we go through in something like retreat, in our daily practice, and in our lives. Thank you, Cheryl. All right, so I see that Kathy and then Bob. Go ahead.
Thank you, Tim. I did have a question. I had this last week, but here it is again. And I would appreciate you what you have to say on this. How does understanding your mind help with this training? And I'm just a little mixed up about that, I guess, because I get mixed up with the mind and the thinking mind, and my difficulty is also.
Can you hold on for just a second, Kathy?
Yeah.
Tim, could you drop that down? Okay, go ahead. I couldn't hear you over this.
Okay. I'm almost through. I think I've had an initial difficulty with thinking that the thinking mind is somehow kind of bad, or something to be ignored, or something to stay away from, but of course it's part of us, you know, I guess. Anyway, if you have some comments on that, I'd appreciate it, Tim. Thanks.
Sure, just around the idea that the thinking mind is bad and we need to overcome it and conquer it and get rid of it, that kind of a thing, and how do you work with that?
Yes, and how, you said, how does understanding your mind help with this training? So what, how does that work? Thanks.
Okay, yeah, that's great. So starting with the understanding the mind, this is such a, it's kind of a fun, I don't know if it's a fun trick, but it's a joke that we sometimes finally get the punchline after a while of kind of struggling with, that we naturally come into practice and our minds, we can see how much distress they cause us. And our minds are just reactive. They're like judging. Oh, they just don't stop judging, comparing. You know, I feel an inadequacy. It just feels like this really thick prison, and it just ongoing, just insistent, constant chatter. So, of course, if we see, okay, meditation, I can get rid of the mind. I can quiet the mind. I can stop the mind. That sounds great. And really, a better way to rephrase the initial training is not so much of quieting the mind, but more learning to focus the attention. So focus the attention on something. Right? Now, the understanding parts, as long as we have the view of the mind as a, this is where the joke comes in. As long as we view the mind as a problem, we're almost guaranteeing it to continue to be on, you know, a problem, basically. The very attitude of a problem makes it a problem. And you start to, this is where the joke comes in, that you notice that you might be struggling with a pattern for years. And then someday you say, okay, I'm just going to accept the fact that my mind does this. And then you're surprised by that wholehearted acceptance. Suddenly something shifts and the mind actually quiets down of its own accord. That we realize our very resistance, our very friction with it is what kind of kept it going, kept perpetuating that quality of mind. So some practical ways to start to work with that, you know, start to have a sense of humor about your mind. I remember Sharon Salzberg sharing that she named her internal narrative, her internal critic, as Lucy, like from Lucy and the Peanuts, because it had that same kind of tone. So whenever she heard her interior narrative, I should say, start to go that way, she'd say, "Oh, hi, Lucy." So already she's relating to it. She taught herself to relate to it, not from a sense of aversion and pushing away, but actually of connection. Okay, so that's where the understanding the mind comes in. You say, okay, let me connect with the mind. And having a sense of humor, you start to soften that natural tendency of natural friction. Okay, so it doesn't matter if it's the inner critic, the inner judge, the comparing, the mind that's worried, the mind that's obsessive, the mind that's, you know, full of lust, full of fantasy, full of whatever it might be. Just start to have a friendly relationship. Something that makes, we're looking for something that makes you smile a little bit when you relate to it that way versus that frown, that, you know, furrowed, okay, how can I get rid of this? So that's transition from last month's struggling, trying to catch the ox to actually befriending the ox, learning to train it. And related to this, you know, there's the humor, helps you depersonalize. There's also the compassion that's so helpful. To realize, let me just see this as an expression of suffering. See how this causes suffering for myself and others. And not to add the judgment that you're causing suffering, but really lead with that act of compassion, of really meeting the suffering, turning toward the suffering without an agenda. All right, Kathy, how's that sound?
Yeah, great. Thank you very much.
All right, Bob, why don't you go ahead and then we'll see if there's anyone here in person.
Hi, Tim. I'm just thinking about what Kathy said and what Cheryl said and what you said about titration. And I try to sit with Gil Fronsdahl every morning. He has a 7 a.m. sit. Last week he was focusing on anger. And one day he was talking about how much space it takes up in your mind and just becoming aware of the space, and what you and Kathy are talking about makes me think of, rather than focusing on the anger or the upset, just thinking about just the volume of your mind that it takes up, and from there just thinking about this picture has got me thinking about sort of oxherder and ox as sort of this ability to make active choices that the mind has, but also this kind of undifferentiated potential that the ox might represent, that it's much, much, much larger, and that the ox herder may have deficiencies in some regard, but does have this human capacity that our minds have to make choices and to guide, and it might make us crazy sometimes because we're distinguishing between dualities, but it's also kind of a gift in the sense that it allows us to lead or to make choices for the ox as we move down our individual paths. That's how I've been thinking about it, is my mind is this kind of undifferentiated potential, and the necessity that I make some choices about how I'm going to guide it, and also the gift of being able to do that, I guess. Anyway, my two cents.
Thank you, Bob. Yes, yeah, that's a nice way to look at it, because it really, our practice works because we do have choice. We do have the power of intention and where we choose to focus our attention itself. That's in itself is a huge piece of wise action, is how do we meet the mind? How do we meet this moment? And it is a choice. And it's true. Yeah, these series of pictures, we can almost, you know, reframe each one as, okay, what's the attitude with that little figure? How is he or she trying to meet the ox, meet, you know, that condition? And there's the desperation, sometimes there's the bewilderment, sometimes the, you know, intense effort, sometimes there's the surrender. And all along, you know, there is this way that we're training the ox But as we, some people talked about last week, there's also the training of ourselves. Docs is actually training us. And there's that potentiality, the potential of our minds start to really open up, you know, in these next few pictures, and especially after next month, when we start to really, it really shows that spaciousness of the spiritual practice. And then you also, you know, started with talking about the space that the mind, you know, anger, for example, takes up, the psychic space, the energy space of that, and reflecting on that. And it's like doing that is like going into the first noble truth. It's really seeing the nature of dukkha, really seeing the impact of that. And you know, there's been times in my own practice when I've seen a certain particular pattern of mind, a particular tendency, a pattern that is so ingrained. And when I actually see that it's optional, when I actually see that, and I suddenly it's like I start to see how much time, how much energy, how much suffering has been caused by that particular. Yeah, it's like, whoa, it's like almost like this life review is like I've seen all of this. And sometimes, you know, I feel the need to sob and cry because not so much of the overwhelming, but just seeing, wow, this is, I'm really feeling the pain that I've caused myself. There's also a joy in it that I realize it's optional. I realize that I've seen through it in a way that it won't have the same grip again. And it may come back in small ways, but there's a way that starts to free. And so that's, I think that's a lovely way to look at it, is to see, yeah, this, you know, the mind does take a lot of energy in our worry, in our anger, in our fear. And this is part of the liberation that we're learning in this practice, is to free that space. Okay, thank you, Bob.
Thanks, Tim. This picture has really given me a lot to think about this month, and I'm a little worried that I'll get stuck here. But we'll see what next month brings.
Yeah, I don't want to worry about the, you know, getting stuck, just, you know, noticing what's most appropriate for our practice. You know, at some point, you know, one day, one week, or one meditation, it might be we're riding the ox home, like next week. Then the next sitting or the next moment, we're trying to find where that ox is. It was like, where is that ox? I'm trying to struggle with it, or there's this sense of harmony. Because we're really, it's, think of it more, not so much as a progression, but more of this kind of helical movement pattern that we go through these different parts. And as we start to meet deeper levels of our delusion, of our conditioning, we might naturally revert back or go back earlier in the series. That's perfectly fine. There's nothing wrong with that. The important thing is to meet yourself where you are. And it's also important to notice when you're kind of, okay, I'm done. I don't have to do anymore. And to still let that potential pull your heart forward.
Thanks, Tim.
You bet. Anyone back here in the room? Yes, come on up.
Hey, y'all. My name's Adam. And we've been talking a little bit about intention and the kind of subtle intention, not just the, you know, how we approach a situation, but what is the basis for our practice or how we meet the moments. And it brought up for me kind of a big part of my practice right now, which is giving. In particular, when I'm having a really crappy time, I'm really struggling. And as that idea was kind of percolating about intention, I thought, this makes sense from this perspective of, if I'm having a bad time, I sometimes have to get up and go find something to give to somebody or something. And sometimes it's the only way I can dig myself out of a really challenging position, it feels like. And I think what I'm trying to like formulate here is that this feels like a way of realigning with intention of, from being caught up in my own story of separation to actively connecting and something in that kind of shifts back into a state of more connection and where I can be more intentional with my practice. So I just wonder if you could talk or say anything about that practice of giving and aligning with intention, if that sounds right to you.
Sure. I think that's a great, let me ask you a question. So you guys could hear him online? Good. So what do you think makes that shift when you're in that real difficult situation, difficult mind state, and you find a way to give? What shifts? Can you articulate that?
I mean, I think that just in that moment of giving and connecting, it feels like there's an opening to step outside of my own story. And something I'm actually, you know, almost more curious about is what is it that happens in those moments where I'm feeling crappy that says, hey, go find somebody to give to. Go do something intentional about this. And there's the shift that happens in the moment of giving, but there's also that shift that happens in the moment of, you know, realizing, wow, I'm in a crappy place. Yeah. I need to do something about it. Did that address what you were asking?
Yeah, great. Okay, I'll come back. Yeah, so that's, until he gets back to his seat. It's a really nice articulation of that, really that shift of underlying intention and the view behind that. So when you're in that kind of crappy place, that place of difficult reaction or whatever that might be, there is very much kind of a separation, a self-centeredness, a sense of isolation. And then that shift into generosity, giving, you connect, you see what can I give? How can it be of service? So yeah, I mean, you articulated that really well. I just want to kind of reflect that back to you that you, it's really a shift of, you know, and what starts that shift, you know, in your midst of that, that's really it's a nice, you should feel very encouraged by that's where you go. You know, cause that's really where we're tested. We're not tested when things are going smoothly, when everything's harmonious, when everybody's saying, you're a great guy. Everything is like, you know, there's no much more friction. There's not much friction there. But when things get difficult, that's really interesting to notice, where does our minds go? You know, what's our default? And so, you know, for some reason, you're choosing wisdom in that moment. You're something sensing that there's a sense of separation. The way I'm acting, viewing the world, viewing myself in the world, it's just going to cause more and more suffering. And you can feel the heaviness, the momentum of it, and we can easily go down just surrendering to that. But there's something in you that's, you know, there's a wisdom in you that's saying, okay, let's do opposite of that. Let me go to that sense of giving, of generosity. And that's a quality of wisdom that's really transcending the conditions of life, right? There's somehow there that's coming through. And it's nice that you that's coming through in those really difficult times. And I think that's, you know, I think Adam's, you know, the way he's practicing, you know, that should be an inspiration to all of us, is to find for our own version of that. You know, how do we actually, when things are really not going well, when our mind's in a dark place, how do I find that pathway? You know, generosity is a beautiful way. It might be compassion. It might be, you know, maybe working with the, like we talked about, the titration of attention, but shifting that view. And that's, I think, why the Buddhists, you know, often when I do a Dhamma talk, I talk about the three pillars and how we often start with a sense of isolation, of contraction of heart, of self-centeredness. And the Buddha said, okay, first of all, start to be generous. You know, there's this generosity that you start to, you have to look outside yourself in order to be generous, unless you're really sneaky about it. Like, okay, I'm going to be generous in order to reinforce how great I am, which I'm sure some people find a way to do. But if you really do it in a sincere way, it already starts to shift you out of that. Same thing with ethical conduct. It's like when we're acting from a harmful way, that's based in separation. That's based in isolation. We start to take others' well-being into account. We're already going into connection. And then our meditative practice and our, that's really what brings, allows us to see more and more clearly how that happens. So yeah, there's a voice of wisdom that's coming forth there. So, and you can trust where that takes you because you've seen it over and over again. It sounds like that shift, that's really a helpful shift. And that's from wise action. That's going from what's, you know, the words unwholesome or unskillful or painful, let's say, to some, how do you release that? How do you shift to that? So that's a really concrete, beautiful way of expressing that. So thank you for sharing that with all of us, Adam. All right, maybe one more and then we'll call it a night. If there's anyone in the room, online. All right, looks like we're complete, which is good, for at least for the moment. Huh? So we had announcements last week, so check the website. It's probably the best way. Get on the mailing list. There's a monthly email that Cheryl and her team puts together. Who's the main person who does that? Kelby? Yeah. Yeah, so Kelby works behind the scenes to put this great, you know, monthly newsletter. There's all these people behind the scenes. The, you know, Ken who works on the Zoom calls, and there's the people who set up all these volunteers behind the service really make Sims work. So thank you all those who are unseen and often unacknowledged. That, you know, I appreciate each one of you. And next week, Tweri will be back and she'll be teaching this next picture, this riding the ox home. Very, very interesting picture. And I'll be back on the last Monday of July, the 25th, and then coming back full on in August. All right, so have a wonderful evening and look forward to seeing you the next time. Thank you for all your engagement.